Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Let's see if Nate Buchady can recover from a rough first hour, ending with him, for some reason, slamming his headphones on the floor in disgust.
Rough.
I don't know.
I think he shined.
A lot of things that happened in there.
I think he shined bright.
I do, too.
A lot of things happened there. So,
absolutely forgot how to pronounce Jeff Chedia's name.
Four different times.
You refused to give Brandon McAnderson a cold bottle of water and just left him in here in the TV studio.
I gave him filtered water.
The segment's going on. Like, where the hell's Nate at? He come running down the hall with a cup. Like, what's he doing?
And you know what?
Like, what are you doing?
Because the filtered water spigot in the commissary is really slow.
Yeah.
It took me like a minute and a half to fill that cup of water up.
That's like when you got the bottle that's already filled. Grab it.
I was trying to save my plastic.
You know, that's exactly right. Introduce our guest
to this
here.
Party.
That's right.
Hey,
he's very excited to be here, it looks like.
I think I'm very excited to have him here. One of my favorite guys from the greatest Kansas football team of all time, the Orange Bowl team from 2007.
Okay, correct.
2007. Lawrence High, Chesty Lion.
Yeah.
And he does work for Jayhawk Television, now covering the Kansas football team as well. And we're going to relive some of that right now. Brandon McAnderson, B-Mac, we always call him. What's up, man? How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm glad to be here.
So I've stayed in touch with you over the years. It was kind of fun for a long time when my kids were in daycare.
Uh-huh.
Your wife worked at the daycare center where my kids went to school, so we got to hang out and we would reconnect every once in a while then. But why don't you fill Kansas fans in, maybe that haven't heard from you, and if you're not giving them a follow on Twitter, do it. I'll tweet out his Twitter handle. But what have you been up to?
Just being a dad, you know, being somebody's husband. You know, taking care of things and, you know, following sports. I'm a huge sports fan, so I've been doing some podcasting here and there. Been doing some TV analysts for KU, calling TV games for local high school for Midco. So I've been, you know, dabbling a little bit and staying close to the game while still being able to, you know, be around my kids.
So I've been watching you on Twitter, too. I mean, you are a big sports fan across the board. You're not just a college football fan.
No, I love it all, man. My wife is huge. She played soccer at Baker, so I'm a huge soccer fan now. You know, she kind of turned me out to that. So I'm a huge soccer fan, football, and Royals Twitter. You know, Royals Twitter is a great place. You can follow the team without, you know, having to sit through all the games. So I follow it all. I love local sports, and I'm a Raiders fan, so this Sunday wasn't that much.
Let's talk about that for a minute. How did that happen?
I mean, Bo Jackson. You know, if you're from Kansas City and you watch Bo Jackson barehand a ball in center field, I mean, if he played for the Bengals, I'd be a Bengals fan. If he played for the Chiefs, I'd be a Chiefs fan. He played for the Raiders. Unfortunately, at this point, it's been rough being a Raiders fan. I'd like a divorce now, but I can't.
What was your experience like? Because, I mean, so, like, after the first quarter, were you like, oh, I think we're going to win this game? Or like, I don't know.
I wouldn't go that far. I think I was just happy that the team was competent. And you know that Derek Carr still had confidence, because it's almost like that bar in Bart Simpson's Nightmare when he starts turning green and dies. That's Derek Carr's confidence. So I knew that eventually that thing was going to go away and it was starting to dwindle. So it's fun while it lasts. And I mean, I was almost mad, but I mean, the Chiefs are, I mean, they have a cheat code at quarterback and they have five guys, including Damian Williams and Kelce, faster than everybody else's defensive backs. So it's almost like, why even get mad about this? Like, how many teams are you going to face with this type of weaponry, you know? So,
and see, I'm still getting used to that as a Chiefs fan, because for almost all of my life, other teams would have that quarterback, have that dynamic elite quarterback, and the Chiefs wouldn't, and I'd have to sit through games like that and just shake my head. And so I'm just curious, because hopefully I'll never know what it's like to have Mahomes doing that to my team, because Kansas City's waited their whole lives for this kid. I mean, when you watch him, I mean, you played football at a high level. I mean, you spent some time in the NFL. When you see him, that's not, like you said, the cheat code. That's not right.
No.
Some of the stuff he does, you're not supposed to do, but he does it anyway, and he does it right.
Right. I think it's twofold. It's kind of, as if you're the opponent, it's pretty helpless, because, you know, you could try press coverage, you could try off coverage, you could try zone coverage, you could try blitzing. None of it works. But it's also good, because as a sports fan, how many of these great players, the Aaron Rodgers of the world, have had the perfect head coach and system to fit the talent. You know, so as if you're a general NFL football fan, this is great for the league because it's a perfect pairing in terms of ability, style, scheme. It's perfect.
See, it's funny. We've never talked about this before, but I was a Raiders fan as a kid because of Bo Jackson, but I did get a divorce. Like when I got to college and I realized, like, man, I'm doing this wrong. This is my hometown team. I see what it does for the community when the Chiefs actually win, and I'm cheating myself out of this experience, you know, this collective experience with other Chiefs fans in Kansas City. So I left the Raiders when Bo Jackson was done. I left the Raiders, and I've been a Chiefs fan like ever since. But I loved Bo Jackson that much too. Like Steven always laughs because he's my favorite athlete of all time. Oh, yeah. I still swear he's the greatest athlete to ever live.
Agreed.
You know? So
agreed.
I'm with you on that, but. I'm glad I'm a Chiefs fan right now. I tell you that much.
Great time to be a Chiefs fan. My little son loves the Chiefs, so yeah. I'm Chiefs by association a little bit.
So let's talk about, I mean, what a weekend it was. Kansas winning, K-State winning, Mizzou winning, the Chiefs winning. We don't get that very often when everybody wins, and so everyone's loving football right now. But it all started Friday night at Boston College. And after what happened against Coastal Carolina, I don't think many people gave KU a chance of winning the game, but not only did they win, after down 17-7 after the first quarter, they dominated the game. They ran Boston College off the field, and that was, were they 21-point underdogs going into the game?
Yeah, at one point at least. I know the line moved a little bit here and there, but it was over 20 points by the time the game started.
It looked like BC should have been 21-point underdogs, and so, I mean, how did that happen?
I don't know. I mean, I would love to say that I had the answer to that. But I didn't see it. I mean, defensively, I think I saw it. I like what they're doing on defense because they're playing base defense. They're not moving around. They're not doing a lot of blitzing. So it's guys lining up and playing. And that's a testament to, you know, player development in a short period of time and then putting guys in the right place so that they can be effective. And they got a lot of experience in the back end. So I'm not super, you know, surprised by the defense. Offensively, they'd shown 5% of that. And I would say there was one drive in the Coastal Carolina game where you were kind of like, hey, this doesn't look so bad. But, I mean, that was it. You know, that wasn't like that was something that you were looking forward to. But I think they proved that they have talent and they have athletic playmakers, and this coaching staff found a way to get them in the right places.
So they changed up their offense a little bit, right? Like, they started to spread things out, and the buzzword of football today's world, RPO.
Right.
They started doing that a little bit more. Is it as simple as that? Did they just change the scheme and find something that worked? Did they surprise Boston College with that? What did you see there?
So I think they definitely did surprise Boston College. It's hard to prepare for something that you did not see on film and something that's not in the history of the coach. Les Miles has never done anything like that. So I think that was a part of it. I think ultimately they decided that for them RPO was a big deal because they played fast and they didn't audible. So what killed them against Coastal Carolina is they were running plays into boxes where they were outnumbered. So where the defense just had more people than Kansas had blockers. Well, if you use an RPO system, that's the basis for it, is that I have uncovered people out here because they think we're going to run the football. So we're just going to sling it out there and play one-on-one. Come to find out, KU has really good receivers. You know, it's like it's one of those things. It's, you would never know your receivers are good if they don't get opportunities. And I think they got opportunities in one-on-ones, and they won.
So for Kansas fans that are hoping, because I think, Nate, you were the first one to bring this up, Turner Gill, that the second game was that big win against Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
But then we all know what happened. And so for Kansas fans that are hoping this will be different, and obviously Les Miles is a more accomplished head coach than Turner Gill was at that point, why believe this is different? Obviously, like we just said, Les Miles he's won a national championship. He has that reputation, and he was very good at Oklahoma State as well. But what leads you to believe that wasn't just one night against Boston College, that he could actually turn this program around?
I think the big difference was the way that they handled adversity in that game. I mean, the starting quarterback throws a bad interception, basically the second snap of the game. They're on the road. They're 21-point underdogs. They had every reason to fold, and they didn't. And I think that was a really good sign because of how they did it. Because I think there are similarities between that South Dakota and Georgia Tech transition. But I think the big difference is everything didn't go right against Boston College, and they found a way to get the lead back, and then they found a way to finish the game on the road. And my thing about Kansas in the past has been they've been close to winning some games. But I think we were getting ahead of ourselves saying they could have won the game, because I think there's just more that goes into winning. And I think that what they proved in that Boston College game is that they have a better understanding of how to finish and how to win.
That's a great point that you make. I used to get in arguments with some of my buddies when they'd say, oh, man, we almost beat Texas. You know, we almost beat TCU. And I'm saying, well, no. They were down seven. You know, they never had the ball with a chance to win. They had the ball with a chance to tie with 7 minutes to go, and they threw a pick. Like, there's, you know, that's not almost beating somebody.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Like, almost beating somebody is you had a three-point lead at the end of the game, and then something happened.
Right. You know? Yeah.
And they just, so, but one thing that is, that I will say seems different to me, at least from the last regime, is, boy, it seemed like every time something went wrong, David Beatty would make a big change.
Right.
Okay, we blew this game because our punt returner fumbled a couple of punts. I'm going to take over special teams now, and I'm going to coach special teams. We played a bad game at quarterback. I'm going to change the quarterback, and we're going to do something different. And it just seemed like they could never get any traction going in any one direction because as soon as something happened, well, we're going to change that. And I know he took a lot of heat for it, but Les Miles said, we're sticking with Stanley at quarterback. He throws the pick to open up the game, and I'll be honest, I was watching going, well, he right. was terrible last week, and now he throws a pick the first series, and Les Miles stuck with him.
Right.
And I'm curious, your perspective, if you go back to the Mangino days or whatever, is that, how significant is that, that if Les Miles is providing an actual steady hand through what will probably be some tough times when they're trying to build the thing?
I think it's the most important thing. Someone asked me about the Indiana State game that they ended up winning late, what the big difference was or how we looked. And the word I used was competency. You know, there just wasn't a bunch of people, you know, pointing fingers and screaming at each other and not getting lined up and getting penalties for too many men on the field and offsides and fumbling snaps and bobbling punts. None of that. So I think what you're seeing is the foundation for building a good team. I think you build a foundation for a good team by playing base defense. I think they've done that really well. You do it with special teams. Their punter has been awesome. They've had a pretty solid returns in the kick return game. So I think they're doing all the things that lead to being a good football team, even if it doesn't happen right away. I think that what you're finding now is they have talent, and it could happen right away. But the building blocks are being built the right way.
So up next is West Virginia, and West Virginia has been somewhat of an enigma to try to figure out because I was at the game in Columbia when Missouri was up 31-0 at halftime, and West Virginia just did not look very good at all. And you're thinking, okay, this is a bad football team. And then last week, they put up 44 points against North Carolina State and won 44-27. They have a new coach as well, Neil Brown, formerly of Troy. And so, I just don't know what to expect from West Virginia, but it does appear that this is an opportunity for Kansas to start the season off, the conference season off, against a team that is beatable.
Yeah, I think they're very comparable, and I think that could be said about a lot of the Big 12. If you look at West Virginia, Texas Tech, you know, some of these teams have some of the same question marks. I mean, Iowa State did go to a bowl game last year, but they look very similar to this group of teams. So it'll be interesting to see how Kansas matches up against them. When you look at Kansas's talent and physicality, you feel like, man, this looks the same. You know, it's not like you're looking at a team that's completely overmatched. So I think they'll have a chance to compete in these games, and that is my hope. My hope is that they are in these games within a touchdown or hold a lead some point late in the game. I don't expect them to beat teams by 25, 24 points. I just expect them to be in these games with teams they're comparable to, and I think West Virginia is one of those.
So let's go back to your time at KU, because that was the last time that Kansas was relevant in football. By the time you got to KU, Mangino had already been there for a couple years, right?
1 year.
He'd been there for only one year, okay. And that first year was a rough year.
Yes, it was.
I still remember them getting I was doing the sidelines at the time, and Mangino got the whole team together huddled up because they were getting just smoked by K-State, and he gave them like this rah-rah speech at like, you know, in the middle of the game. He huddled the whole team up on the sideline. It's like, we're not going down without a fight, because he was trying to turn the culture around. What were some of the signs you saw early then that, hey, this thing is changing? Even if we're not winning games right away, we're starting to turn it in the right direction. How could you tell as a young man at that time on the team?
Well, 2002, when they lost to K-State, it was 64-0.
Yeah.
And it was cold and miserable.
Yeah.
And it felt like a low point, but then we had several other low points later. But that one was pretty low. But I actually committed to Kansas that night. I committed to Kansas the night after the K-State game.
Really?
Yeah, I just was tired of it. I didn't want to. I'm from Lawrence, and I didn't want that to be that way anymore, and I thought that Coach Mangino could turn it around. I think the going into the next season, the first thing that we saw was the change in physicality, the change in how bad we wanted it and how much that was translating to the field. So those were the things that I started to see first in terms of what we were building was competency first, because you just can't skip that step. And then secondly, competitiveness, because it felt like, you know, before I got there, 2002-ish, I don't think teams were even preparing for Kansas. You know, they might have done it for a couple days and looked, yeah, whatever. You know, I don't even think they cared. So I think that our first level after competency was respectability. And that's coming out and hitting somebody in the mouth, being competitive for a whole game, giving them a lot of complications and having a chance at the end to possibly win some of those, which we did in 2004. We won at Missouri. We had Texas on the rope. So those kind of things were starting to be signs that we were physical and that we were competitive. So those kind of things ended up building towards what we become.
I mean, yeah, before the Riesing era even really came about, a lot of it was about being legitimate on defense, game in and game out, with guys like Nick Reed and Charles Gordon and stuff. It seemed like at that time, Mark Mangino was putting a lot of great athletes on the defensive side of the ball, and let's at least make teams know that they were in a game.
Right.
It seemed like that was the approach before it even got to, let's have this great offense with Todd Riesing.
Right, yeah, and that was one of the things, is you could take some things away. You know, everybody wants to do X, Y, Z. But on defense, you have to be able to limit some of that scope. And I think we were able to do that early, and that helped us stay in games. You know, games that, you know, we probably didn't have a chance to win, but we were competitive in because our defense gave us a chance to, because we had some real quarterback struggles before landing on Riesing.
Do you think – we've been talking a lot about the attempt to generate excitement in Lawrence for the football team. And my attitude has always been you gotta win to generate excitement. You don't generate excitement and then win. It's – the winning is what's going to get people excited. Do you think there's going to be a lot of excitement for this game on Saturday because of what the team did in Boston College? Are you getting a sense that people are going to turn out at Memorial Stadium?
Absolutely. I think the KU fans are hungry for a good football team. And, you know, Lawrence is a good football town. It's a good football experience. And I think people enjoy it, but you've got to give them something to enjoy. Most of it has been quite embarrassing, you know, and that's been the hard part. It's been more than not good. It's been embarrassing. So right. I think that fans are ready to support something that is supportable, and I think this is heading towards something that they can support.
Yeah, you just want to go to the game and feel like your team's going to be in it. Like,
right.
You know, they're going to give you a shot and not make you, you know, not make you want to walk out at halftime. So, right. You know, and so, yeah, that's the first step. I want to ask you about the running back rotation, because obviously that Orange Bowl season, it was this thunder and lightning combination that you and Jake Sharp had. And this year, now that Puka Williams has come back from the suspension, I think nobody talks about Herbert.
No.
You know, he had a great game against Boston College, and I've had some people tell me, I think he's as good as Puka Williams, just in a different way.
Right.
What do you think of the rotation? How do you think they ought to use those two guys, and what do you think of each of those running backs?
I love them both. I think that Puka Williams was the best true freshman running back I've ever seen. And he's just a good vision guy, and a lot of speed guys aren't North and South guys, and he is, and I think that's what separates him. The interesting thing about Khalil Herbert, it seems like he's better when Puka Williams is in the lineup, and I don't know if that's just a complementary skill thing, because Herbert is a slasher, so he's somebody that's he's a fast downhill back, and he has a little bit of wiggle, but he's mostly a one-cut-and-burst guy, mm-hmm. And Puka is a guy that can pretty much do everything. He can catch, he can shake, he can get four tough yards, so he's... I would say Puka's more complete, but the complementary of both of them is a really good thing. It's not necessarily a thunder and lightning. It's a, you know, you got a wiggle guy and you got a slasher, and they work really well together. And it seems like every game that Puka plays, Herbert is just more effective. That opening week, Herbert ended up with, I think, 18 for 82 yards, and I think he has 19 for like 200 and something the last couple games. He's averaging nine, almost 10 yards a carry for the season. And I think a lot of that has to do with the combination of his skill set with Puka's. And then offensive coordinator deserves credit too, because I think they're doing different things in terms of stylistically. They're doing more power run stuff and getting Herbert downhill quicker and doing more zone and selective stuff with Puka.
So when you're looking for signs of progress in year one of a rebuild, do you put a number on it as far as wins? If they win four games or they win five games, that's a success? Or do you just strictly measure it on, are they competitive in a number of games? Are they getting better, even though maybe they don't win some of these games? You could tell the team's getting better and more competitive. How do you measure success in year one of a rebuild?
That's how I would measure it, with competitiveness. I think it's hard to put it on wins, because you don't learn to win. There's no formula for learning to win other than actually winning. So I think that there are steps in between, and for me it's competitiveness. It's ascension. You know, being on a certain path and staying on it and not getting taken back by, you know, inconsistency in the kicking game or inconsistency with the running backs or ball handling. Those things stay consistent and you lose because a team has a better game plan or you lose because a guy makes a play. But obviously you can win those games too. And I think they have the talent to win those games. And I'm not ready to say they can't win some of these games. I'm ready to say, okay, you took a step forward against Indiana State at that last drive. You took a step backward against Carolina. You took 100 steps forward against Boston College. Let's keep moving forward. Let's be competitive. You know, it's a 4.5-point line, I think, for West Virginia.
It opened up at 7, and now it's down to at least 5.
So let's keep it there. You know, let's keep it around there. That means that you should have a lead several times in this game, and I think their defense will give them a chance to be in games, especially at home.
Who do you like the most on this defense? Like, are there a couple of players in particular that stand out to you?
Yeah, I love Bryce Tornadin, obviously, just because he's been through it all. The guy's a Lawrence guy, and, you know, he's a guy that was going to North Dakota State and was a late add to this team, and he ends up being their best player, you know, on defense, which is quite a journey, but he's just smart and consistent. I love Moraney. I love Drew Prox, and I love Jelani Brown. I like what the defensive line has been way better than anyone could have expected, especially since these guys were in the rotation last year. They just weren't as effective as they are now.
I mean, that's part of the key, isn't it, getting the Bryce Tornadins of the world? I mean, a lot of the guys on your team back in those days were not highly touted players coming out of high school, but they were in the system and they developed, and by the time you guys had that Orange Bowl team, they were solid producers, right? I mean, I feel like that's a huge part of how you're going to win in a place like Kansas.
I agree. I don't think it's, you know, I know Les Miles has done great things in the recruiting game thus far, but I don't think it's realistic for 4 and 5 stars to come want to play here. There's nothing that we could offer them. You know, there's nothing that we could offer them that someone couldn't. But what we could offer a 3-star and a guy that could develop into a great player is to one day be an all Big 12 player. I was like that. I was like a 3-star linebacker, and then I was 2 times all Big 12. So it just happens as you move forward and you develop as a player and they put you in the right places, you can get there.
You still talk to Mangino?
I do. He usually makes fun of me in some way on Twitter. So he's a good guy. He was a guy that, you know, looked out for us, and he was someone that believed in me when not a lot of people did.
Are you surprised he hasn't had an opportunity to be head coach again?
I would say no. That ended very ugly and unfortunate. And today's day and age, you can find someone, you know, and I mean, hotter, you know, younger, you know, better looking, more marketable. And I think that was what happened here, is marketability ended up being a big factor in what his future laid out for him with Kansas.
What did you think when all that thing was going down with him getting, you know?
I hated it. Yeah. I just don't like things that get out of the locker room. And I understand that there was reasons for people doing that, but I don't know what those reasons were. I think if there's things that go on in the meeting room and there's things that are being said, because please believe me, the Nick Sabans of the world are saying a lot of similar things. And I think it's hard to hear those things, but if you believe the guy has the right intentions for you, then you ride with it. If you don't, you transfer. You just don't go out and complain about it. I didn't love that. No.
You felt like Mangino had your guys, he had your best intentions at heart.
He did. He just had a different way of showing it. And look, he even apologized. He said he had to humble himself after some of those experiences. So he was definitely imperfect, and there was definitely things that he would have changed himself. But I don't feel like I was a victim of anything.
Yeah. So do you think the Raiders are headed in the right direction under Mayock and Gruden?
I don't know. I hope so. I hope so. They have some good young players, and hopefully they can figure some stuff out.
I'm gonna guess no. But that's all right. I'm gonna hope no.
Right.
But that's all right. You know, I'm rooting for your son. Your son's a Chiefs fan, so I want him to be happy. Yeah, all right. So there you go.
Keep rooting for him.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Mahomes. Hey, Brandon. Thanks a lot for coming in studio. We appreciate it, man. We have to have you back again real soon.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
That's Brandon McAnderson, former KU running back, talking about the Kansas win over Boston College and the Big 12 conference opener, kickoff at 3:30 in Lawrence against West Virginia, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.